Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Andra, how are we doing?
Well, Richard, how are you?
Very
That's
well.
That's confused everyone.
this podcast is, we're very grateful to Luis, our Portuguese techie genius, who's fixed us up with the ability to talk to each other. We're only about 120 miles apart in UK. This is a first. This is unusual, but I've said this before with podcasts, reminds me of so many Fridays when you were at home.
Yes.
I sat on my own in the Talk Sport studio.
That was a favourite, wasn't it, on that Friday, when you used to do your book review, remember?
We all know the story. You take your headphones off and you'd go make your cup of tea and listen. But you can't do that this time.
No, I'm here. I've got my cup of tea by my side.
I'm not going to reveal who it is at this point, but our guest today is well worth a listen. Very funny guy. Okay. A proper ref, Andy, I would describe him as.
Oh, right.
By the way,
we found one. Well done, son.
Yes, but this one retired, would you believe, in 2004, and we're still talking about him.
Wow, okay. Mind boggling.
That's extraordinary. Right, okay, an eclectic mix because we weren't here last week for obvious reasons, and again, we've missed a couple recently for the very same reason, and I think rightly so, Andy. But an eclectic mix of bits and pieces that I've managed to collect over the last 2 weeks now.
Wow.
That I shall run past you. I'd like to get your thoughts a little later on a resurgent Scotland and a stuttering England. I think both those things are worth talking about. But here we go with our first article today. Painkiller of choice, Tramadol, faces a ban by WADA. The powerful painkiller behind harrowing stories of addiction in football and rugby is on the brink of being banned by the World Anti-Doping Agency. I mention that because I'll come back to it in just a moment.
Right.
But this is a drug that Chris Kirkland, former
commentary
England goalkeeper, revealed that he'd been so addicted to that he came close to taking his own life.
Wow.
Not before time, Andy, I would say. This little article here from James Ducker, Northern football correspondent of The Telegraph, reveals that Manchester United have overpaid by £209 million, driving transfer deals upwards. £209 million. I would question that figure.
You question it? You think it's more?
Yeah, I think it's nearer to the billion that they've spent since Fergie left.
By the way, I thought these people passed the fit and proper test. If you ran any other business apart from football like that, you'd be sacked.
Of course you would.
You'd be thrown out.
You missed my point. Consider what they've bought since Fergie left. I'm saying they've wasted a billion, not 209 million.
Oh, yes, you're finding it difficult to find a positive signing then, is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, if you think, I suppose there have been one or two, haven't there? But you wouldn't look back on the decade and say, wow, that was an unprecedented success.
Yeah, I mean, if they've signed in the decade, what would they have signed? Maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 players?
Oh, more.
Really?
Much more.
No.
Well,
yeah, 10 years, 3 a year, 4 a year, 40, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
So you, of those 40, how many would you say, just a percentage-wise, would you say has been successful?
Well, there are doubts about Fernandez now. Can he or can't he play with Ronaldo? Will he or won't he? I've always just had him down as posturing for the most part. Once we'd exposed this ridiculous run of penalties that they were on, Andy, yeah. You remember there were about 18 season. He stopped scoring goals and he stopped influencing games. So I mean, listen, we'll come back to Maguire.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's extraordinary that today's pundits, Gary Neville calling for him to go and get psychological help. Well, if you boys had backed off him, he wouldn't need it.
That's fair.
That's the help he wants. A little bit of encouragement from the guys. I mean, Carragher's battered him this past fortnight. Why?
Has he?
Why?
Well, listen, people, and I watched both Gary and Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher playing. And, you know, both never had careers where they never had bad spells in their lives. None of them did. No professional footballer ever has. And listen, whatever we think of Harry Maguire and whether you fancy him or not, that's irrelevant. That's not the issue. The issue is the kid's gone through a really tough time at the moment with form, with belief, with confidence. All the things you need to be a top player, he's suffering from a lack of right now. And yes, he does need. He needs, first of all, a good coach. Now, whether because of flipped coaches so often, that hasn't helped him. Maybe. And maybe Ten Hag can settle him and get him playing at his best. But no, the thing about football is everyone thinks footballers are immune to criticism. They're not. They're far from it. And in the world of social media where we live these days, the criticism is so stark. It's so in your face. It's not like I used to pick up a paper keys and say, grey, 2 out of 10. And I used to put it down and think, well, all right, I'll be okay next week. You know, or grey had a stinker. He missed 2 or 3 very good chances. Then you put the paper down and that's it. It's now you pick up your phone. There's memes about you. There's all the criticism comes from everybody on Twitter. The keyboard warriors are having a field day. And I'm not just talking about Harry Maguire. I'm talking about every footballer that's having a bit of trouble at the moment. And it's a harsh world we live in. But they do need some help, these people, the ones that are struggling. And that might be England's problem at the moment going into the World Cup, is that too many other players, we've talked about it in Qatar, you and I, on BeIN Sports, many times, Keezy, you've had a worry about this for a while, that too many England players are not playing regularly, are not playing up to the form going into a World Cup that you need when you look at the likes of Brazil and Argentina and the likes who are blowing teams away. Now, that might be peaking a little too early, and maybe Gareth Southgate has paced his arrival at the World Cup in Qatar in November perfectly, and they arrive in top form. But they need people like Harry Maguire, you know. Criticism's difficult. Unless you're mentally strong, and I mean mentally strong, criticism can affect you.
Well, let me just make the point that the two guys that have had most to say on this subject, you've named Gary Neville, these two boys would appear to be immune from criticism. And if you turn the tables on them, they don't like it. Let me just say this. Gary Neville, it's, as far as I'm concerned, Andy, wrong on just about every major issue that he's ever discussed. And Carragher, Jamie, the difference between you and Harry Maguire is Harry wants to play for his country. He didn't quit and walk away.
Okay. All right. Okay. Have that then.
UEFA could include MLS and a revamped Super Cup. American teams could take on the Champions League winners and a revamped UEFA Super Cup. We're not surprised, are we?
No. They want more games, not less. So.
And also... We're edging, Andy, towards that formula that I said years ago, again at BeIN Sports, that we're heading into an era where, particularly with another American owner about to turn up, Bournemouth, 10 that is now in the Premier League, these guys want to make money. The best way to make money, play football matches in different parts of the world. That's what they're trying to do. Good luck, Andy, to a friend of ours. We've spoken to him on this show, Charlie Adam, who's announced his retirement at 36. Yeah.
Good lad, Charlie. He's a great lad, Charlie. Yeah, well, good luck, Charlie. I know what that day's like, that first day of after you've announced your retirement. It's a very sobering day, and you think, wow, I'm never going to feel that again. It's strange, but good luck, whatever you do.
Mansfield become the first EFL club to move a match forward to reduce lighting and heating bills. It's a big, big concern to teams in Leagues 1 and 2 and worth keeping an eye on. Back to the subject we were just discussing here. Manchester United admit payouts to get rid of Solskjaer and Ralph Rangnick cost them £24.7 million.
How can that be the case? How can
Rangnick,
that be?
Andy Ranić sacked 4 months into a 3-year contract.
I know. Hold on. Wait a minute. I might have got this wrong then. I assumed, and something assumption being the reason of all cock-ups, I assumed that Ranić had signed a deal to the end of the season, and then a deal would be then discussed should he have been impressive, and then a deal would have been discussed if he hadn't been. I didn't think he was given a 3.5-year deal right at the start.
Yes, it's just
mind-boggling. I don't think we knew that. Honestly, Casey, I don't have any... I only else thought Ranić's got it to the end of the season. He's got 6 months to impress, and then if he does well, they'll rubber stamp it. I can't believe they committed 3.5 years. Wow.
Because of the excitement about the appointment of Erik ten Months, I think we all lost track of that. The aforementioned Fernandez, Paul Parker's had a right whack out here. Very selfish Fernandez slammed and told Manchester United fans wish he'd joined Spurs. He came out recently and said he was disappointed that the opportunity to go to Tottenham, which came first when he was at Porto, didn't actually materialise. And Paul Parker has said... makes sense. Manchester United overpay for all the players they've signed recently, but it probably would have been better to see him go to Tottenham because Manchester United are too big of a club for him in the sense that you can see how rubbish he plays when things ain't going right.
Wow. Apart from the amazing football stadiums and pitches that the guys play on and the money that they get, I'm so glad I played in my time.
By the way, I watched YouTube the other night. Everton 3-2 at Newcastle. Sharp left out.
Yes.
For an Andy Gray, who Howard Kendall said had played well in the reserves that week and deserved a chance to start. 89 minutes, Gray winner in a 3-2.
Correct. I remember it. I roomed with Sharpie that day. That was the day that was the weekend I persuaded one of Everton's greatest ever centre forwards, as he turned out to be, not to put a transfer request in.
I knew you were going to say that. You haven't told me that, but I knew you were going to say that.
Honestly, because Graham had started, I'd been injured.
Yeah.
Graham started the season, and then I came back from injury and was fit, and Howard thought, I'm going to put Andy straight back in, and he told Graham, I'm leaving you out, I'm playing Andy and Inchy. And of course, Graham went ballistic to me in the room. I'm fed up. I'm not having that, Andy. I'm not. I'm seeing him on Monday. I'm putting a transfer request. I say, Sharpie, please, promise me. Please. I'm older than you. I'm a little bit more wiser than you. I said, and how prophetic were these words to him? I says, football can change very, very quickly, pal. Just be patient. Promise me you'll be patient. What happens? I score the winner, and I do my metatarsal all in one game. And I'm out for 8 weeks. Sharpie's back in, and him and Inchy went to become the two best front men in the country.
So that was the game in which you tried to top Glenn Roeder then on Inchy's behalf?
Yes. I confess to kicking Glenn Roeder, but I actually didn't quite time it perfectly. And I kicked the bottom of his boot with his 6 aluminium studs there. Having told Inchy, come up to me and said, Andy, he keeps kicking me. I says, okay, so I'll sort it out in a minute, so leave it to me. So I tried, he was about to pass it back to the goalie, and I thought, oh, this is my chance. And I went flying in, and I mistimed it, because just as I made contact, his boot came up, and I smashed the 6 aluminium studs he had in the back of his top of his boot, and my metatarsal snapped. So that was good.
Doesn't surprise me to learn, son, that you were still on the pitch and scored the winner.
Well, there you go, son. Yes, you got it. Didn't go off. Yeah. No,
Kasper Schmeichel, just proof that the grass isn't always greener. The move to Nice is turning into something of a nightmare for him.
Saw that.
Jim Ratcliffe's club concerned at his very high body fat percentage. He's told the owner he wants to be number one, which at the moment he isn't, and apparently he's ignoring squad rules, causing him a little bit of trouble.
Wow.
We have to say at this point, Kasper Schmeichel has not had the right to answer these allegations on this podcast. But that's what they're saying. Glazers pocketed $23 million again last year, despite a £115 million loss for Manchester United.
The only surprise is it's only $23
million.
Yeah. God.
This I loved. One of my favourite players, West Ham, who I haven't always agreed with all the decisions that they've made. But
Mark Noble, you're about to say, yes, I'm guessing.
Yes, back as sporting director. What a very sensible appointment that is.
Yeah, he's great, lad. Another one, you know, continuing the link between not the old and the new, but what West Ham is all about and the new. And I think that's so important.
Can you imagine? David, can I see you in my office about 3 o'clock this afternoon? Now, there were a couple of occasions last year I felt I should have played. back to United. Wage bill has rocketed to $384 million.
Wow.
$384 million.
Is that just player salaries? That must be the whole club, surely.
Yeah, that's player salaries. Suey, of course, who had a little whack at your mate Jack Grealish.
That's not that.
Richard. Players are far too mollycoddled these days. I wrote a blog this week, Andy, pointing out to him that has always been the case.
Yes.
It's just that these days the criticism is more profile. I reminded him of the occasion he followed Kenny up the tunnel. Remember that tunnel used to go down to the dressing rooms?
Yes.
You left to the dressing rooms if you came from reception, right to Bob's office.
Yes.
Kenny came out there. Hey, you. What do you mean, a red-headed gull? I said, I beg your pardon. You said red-headed gull. What he was referring to was that I'd been to Wrexham the previous weekend and they played a friendly and he scored the third. And I said in a match report, a red-headed gull from Kenny Dalglish.
Which is a fact.
It was a fact. Well, no, it wasn't. He went on to then all of the headed goals that he had ever scored in his career. He went on to list, and
that's scary.
Yeah, but they were all the same, Never been any different. This interested me. Football chiefs have condemned 15 players for quitting Spain's women's team in protest at the coach Jorge Vilder. Now, that's the story. Just let's just dig a touch and discuss. This has happened, I think, in the men's game an awful lot. Difference is players just down tools. These women have said, nah, we're not having him, so we're not playing. We're going on strike. I just wondered if it was a precedent, Andy, that the boys might consider going forward was worth following.
What level? Every level?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm just trying to wrap my head around that. If England footballers heading to the World Cup en masse said 10 of them walked out and said, look, we can't play for Gareth Southgate.
I suppose in a way the French have kind of been there, haven't they? The French did it.
I mean, listen, the one thing we do know is that the power of the professional footballer these days is massive, Richard. It's way above, apart from the odd exception, it's way above the power of any coach. Certainly 90% of the coaches would come second to player power and most spheres of football life. So, I mean, I think when you think down, you think, well, are we surprised? Not really. Because that's the power of the footballer, that the footballer has over the coach. The days of, I think, Fergie, Arsene, Guardiola, Klopp, they're the two modern ones who I would say are probably exempt from this. You even look at Thomas Tuchel and people like that who've won Champions Leagues and just lose the dressing room, lose the players. And I know the players haven't come out and said Tuchel must go. I mean, these guys that lose the dressing room, as the modern phraseology is, they've lost the dressing room. Well, that's just the same as, you know what, we don't fancy him, so we're not playing for him. It's very much that. And I think there's only a couple exempt from that. And that's the two I named. I can't think of anyone else. Maybe Arteta at the moment at Arsenal would be exempt from that. But the two big boys, Guardiola and Klopp, are probably the two who are exempt from any kind of player power.
I've nothing to add to this, and I know you won't have, but good luck following the story if you are. Paul Pogba's brother claims that Pogba paid a witch doctor to neutralise Kylian Mbappe. Because he was getting too many headlines and becoming the star of the French national team. It's an extraordinary tale, and we haven't heard the last of it yet. We really haven't.
Can I just, if you don't want to talk about it, remind me, but didn't that happen in the Premier League with a team?
Yes, it did. It happened with Alan Pardew at Newcastle United. Pardew told us it was brought to his attention that one had put a spell on the other. And in order to protect the spell, had taken his boots home every day with him. And Pards, of course, when it came to his note, he had no idea. I don't think any of us did. But it did turn out that was the case, yeah. I forget the name of the two boys up top. One scored with a screamer at Stamford Bridge once.
Demba Ma was one.
Yeah, they were nip and tuck for who was going to wear the 9 jersey.
One put a spell on the other.
Yeah, that was the allegation.
That was it. I remember that.
The FA putting forward its proposal for a regulator, which would see off government in intervention. Andy, government intervention in football? No, sorry.
No. I said, governments get bigger fish to fry than football at the moment.
Keep your eyes out for the Dutch at the World Cup final. LVG
really?
Has now got a,
to fancy yes, them.
No, oh, wow. LVG has got a volleyball coach and is using him to get into the heads of goalkeepers to well, I mean, if we remember, he changed his keeper, didn't he? In one tournament. He later admitted for no good reason other than just playing mind games. But he's now got this volleyball coach. He's apparently a bit of a character, getting into the heads of his keepers who will come up with something special at the World Cup, apparently, to put off penalty takers. Don't know quite what it is or don't really follow it too closely.
Maybe they'll try the Bruce Grobbelaar. The Bruce Grobbelaar goal line.
Yes, Bobby Legg. Now, this was interesting. I know what you're going to say about this, but don't, because you're on side. I know you are in the general conversation about this. That special match recently that was played without heading. You know, we've discussed this a lot.
Yes. And
this game was played recently, Head for Change. It was organized by and another guest, Andy, Professor Willie Stewart, that we've had on this podcast.
Yeah, very much
a part of it. It wasn't so much, I don't think he goes on to say here, to prove it could be done, but more to raise awareness. And they have done. And that's why I mentioned it, because it is something dementia and sport in general that is an issue. And it was an interesting, during the international layoff, it was an interesting experiment. And I'm happy to talk about it. So there we are.
Absolutely. Listen, the age I'm at, the amount of balls I headed, dementia is very, very much not ever far away from my thoughts. And particularly when I've had so many calls in the last, I would say, 18 months, talking about subjects, players that I've played with in my era, who never headed a football.
Yeah.
And who are suffering from dementia. It's staggering.
Did they play head tennis, Andy? Did they head footballs in training?
No, I'm talking like people like Alex Cropley.
I bet he was a head tennis player. I bet he stayed back.
Do you know what? He did play head tennis. He had brilliant feet, especially his left foot.
Yeah.
But not to the extent where, you know, a little flick over the net with a glancing header at the head tennis is no.
Same for Terry Mack. That repetitive, constant movement, that heading of that ball over what? How long did they used to play, Terry and King Kev, afterwards? Hours.
Yeah. Well, I think the only thing that's probably keeping me all right is I was useless at tennis. So
yeah. Yeah, and I've kept you on. I keep you on your toes with a succession of these tales. Thomas Tuchel. I'm quoting Martin Samuel here, but this story I read in many papers. Thomas Tuchel, who lives in Surrey, his daughters go to school there. He arrived on a governing body endorsement visa in January 2021 to work in our country.
Right.
From the day he got sacked, he had only 90 days for that visa. To be current before it expires. He's got to go by December the 6th. As Martin says here, schools won't have broken up by then. Given the volatile nature of management, seems very harsh that we say, thank you very much, off you go.
Give it some thought. Whoever's making the rules, you have to give some thought to things like that. That's ridiculous.
I'll tell you who's making the rules.
Who?
I'll tell you. Government rules. We're out of the European community.
Of course. You're right.
Watford. Basket case. Absolute basket case. Welcome back, Slaven Bilic.
They've sacked the coach. How can they do that?
Because they're completely and utterly mad. They're a bonkers basket case club. And Graham Taylor would be ashamed if he knew
the
manner in which his football
By the way, I'm amazed Elton's association is still as strong as it is.
Well, Slaven Bilic, think the world of him. Great. What are Watford thinking about? Honestly, it's just nonsense. But here's one that really got my blood boiling.
Go on.
That doesn't take
a lot these days.
Rafa Benitez.
Oh, here we go.
Who's blamed being a red. I was a red, so I couldn't get things done. Really? Well, what would that include, Rafa? Getting rid of the head of football, Marcel Brands, which was a big decision that he made. Selling the left fullback. Dina, who was a great lad, and not one word of him being trouble has ever come out of Aston Villa.
No,
which it wouldn't.
No.
But he tried to tarnish his reputation. Yeah. He was hopeless as a manager of Everton. His best days, whatever they were, are long since behind him. And to come out with this nonsense is just, well, we know why. He's put his name up for the Leicester job, so he wants profile. Well, you know, you've got profile. Rafa, no, I'm sorry. You should never have taken the job. You trashed your reputation with Liverpool by doing so, and you trashed your own reputation by telling us that you're really not very good anymore. There you go.
That's honestly fair. Yeah, he lost his job because he wasn't good enough anymore. You're quite right. His best days were way before the Chinese Super League took him on board. And even in the Chinese Super League, he proved he couldn't hack it there.
Correct.
He didn't fail at Everton because he's a red. He failed because he's not very good anymore.
Well, how dare he come out and say now he's a red? During his time there, he was quotes doing something for the people of Merseyside. I mean, what's he think he is? Some kind of messiah? Man, you're a fool, Andy. This I did check out yesterday. It's simple. Don't know why the mail didn't. Jose Mourinho's 2006 Premier League medal that he threw into the crowd actually belongs to Robert Huth. No, it didn't. This was a story that was, if you remember the announcer.
Yeah, I remember.
Stanford Bridge Spy said it wasn't his. It was Robert Huth's, and Mourinho threw it away because Robert was being a nuisance at the time, wanted to get out, and Mourinho just went,
I'm guessing you spoke to Robert?
Of course. When I put this to Robert, his response was very colourful. So I won't use the words that he responded to me with immediately. What I will say is he did go on to make the very good point that nobody has got a right to throw anybody else's medal away like that. His medal is safe and well with him, and this story is utter nonsense. Why the Daily Mail, Oliver Salt, didn't actually pick a phone up and say, Robert, is this right? It's a very simple thing to do.
Of course it is.
Three basic rules, Andy. What did I tell you many times? Check.
Check. Yeah. Check again, I think you said. There's a journalist matter.
And check again. Right,
and
okay.
And the more important one you've taught me, never reveal your sources.
coming back to the drug story, Professional Footballers Association has expressed concern over sleeping pill dependencies as whistleblowers warn that the usage is still surging throughout the game. Now, not for sleeping, Andy, which I know you never did anyway, but these sleepers apparently, according to Ryan Cresswell, he is talking of stories that players mix the pills with alcohol at parties. Several Premier League and international players, he said, are said to take the concoction in a bid to create a euphoric high that will not lead to a drugs ban. That's really scary.
That is scary, by the way.
And the three reporters here, Mike McGrath, Tom Morgan and Jason Burt, top class, top end guys, that wouldn't be reporting this if there were not somebody in that.
That's a worry. That's seriously worrying.
Yeah.
And I got my euphoric high quite simple by scoring a goal. There was nothing gave me a more euphoric high than that, I have to be honest.
Well, on that subject, didn't you once make mention of that to a partner?
Well,
the best feeling in the world.
Yes. Yes.
How did that happen?
I did have to say that. You know, the best field in the world that could never be replaced was scoring a goal in a football match. And my partner at the time said, well, what about making love to me? I said, well, that's a close second, but, you know.
I'll still be able to do that.
I couldn't get out of it. I kind of thought, well, I mean, okay then.
Now then, briefly, before we talk to our guest, England, I think we've done. Scotland?
Oh, terrific. Watched all the games. I just texted a pal of mine and a pal of ours in Qatar, Ian, and just happened to say, like, what a great week for Scottish football. It's been a long time, Richard, since I can remember it being such a positive week and three positive results, important games, big games that we needed to get particular results in. We needed to win two and draw one. And we did. There was a maturity and a belief about us. I don't think it's any coincidence, in my opinion. I've always said this about Scotland recently, and it's not just Steve Clarke, previous coaches as well, their obsession with playing three at the back. Yes, there are going to be times when Scotland have to do that because of what we are, but it was very noticeable that they scrapped that for these three games, played a back four, was more aggressive, certainly in the first two games against Ukraine at Hampden and Ireland. They were more aggressive. They were more on the front foot.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They look like a threat. We look like we could create chances, and I've not seen that for a long time. So I was delighted the way that Steve went about it, because he, again, has taken a lot of criticism for failing to get to the World Cup. But what he's done in the last three games and the players have done has lifted the whole nation, to be honest with you, Keezy, because it was just so nice to sit here for a week. I watched 7 days, three games, all with my country playing, all needing big wins. And some adversity. We started badly against Ukraine, but absolutely battered them. We started not great against Ireland, went behind, but still were good enough to come back and win. And then we went to Ukraine and played really professional and savvy football, is what I would call it. It's the hardest thing in the world in football is to go away or even play at home. That's Liverpool in 89 and get a draw and say, we only need a draw. It's the hardest thing in the world to get your players to do the right thing. And the players and Steve did brilliantly. It was a mature performance in Ukraine. It wasn't in Ukraine, obviously. I think it was in Poland, wasn't it? It was in Krakow. So it was great. It's been a big, big week, lovely week. I'm just so gutted that we're not taking this form or bringing this form to Qatar to be with us this winter.
Yeah, I think I always say this. Yeah, I think any sensible Brit wants to see our national teams do well, and I concur. And I was not as obviously pleased as you, but very happy to see the Scots taking big steps in the right direction this past week. Great, and I know that the Scots are going to say, "Oh, you condescending English prick!" I'm not.
No. I one or two might easy, and I get that, but no, I think that there was genuine. It certainly happened. You and I, well, I live in England when I'm here, so I have lots of, my children were born in England, so, you know, it's one of those that, no, I think people were genuinely pleased. All the texts I've had from pals in England about how impressed they were with Scotland, how delighted they were. Yeah, it's good. It makes a good change instead of getting battered.
Very happy. Right, let's talk to our guest. I remember him most for taking a ball.
Yes, me too.
To the back of his head at Anfield one night. The guilty party was Dean Windass.
Who was
annoyed that a decision had gone against him, and I think it was Hull, and rattled this ball into the back of Jeff Winter's head. Now, to be fair to Jeff, he could have reacted very differently. He just stood there like a bloke, took it, wasn't bothered by the incident. Don't go looking for trouble, Jeff. So that must have gone through his mind. But we get a chance now, Andy, talk to him about it. Many other things. A guy that frustrated us and delighted us in equal measure with the whistle, but I would say was genuinely honest. And I tell you, if we get the chance to have a chuckle with him, you will find him an extremely funny... Jeff, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Good. And by the way, thank you for doing this, Jeff. And it's good to speak to you after such a long time as well. And the thing about you, Jeff, is that all those years, I never spoke with you. I shouted at you.
You weren't the only one, Andy.
From a lofty place up in my gantry.
Yeah,
oh, come on, ref. Not another decision like that.
but Jeff, that was in an era. And you hung your whistle up in 2004, didn't you?
Yes.
And we're still talking about you. That tells me you made an impact, for better or worse, and I like to think better. You made an impact.
Tell the truth, Andy, because I think when we last spoke, you said at the time we thought you were a bit of a knob, Jeff. But all these years on, we perhaps realised you weren't as bad as we thought you were.
Well, there you go, Jeff. It's what Keezy and I were talking about earlier, about people having perceptions of people they don't know. And you can only make a judgment when you meet them. And listen, of course, I couldn't have been alone and people thinking you were a knob at that particular time when you were a referee.
To be quite honest, that is never, ever going to change. I've always... Referees are have been and always will be the pantomime villains. So, yes. You know, I mean, the little frustrated husband who doesn't say boo to a goose for 7 days a week, he goes to the football and he screams abuse for 90 minutes. And who's the easiest target? The referee.
Oh, yes.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter with football fans, because I've gone back now to being a football fan like I was many, many years ago before I took up the whistle. And fans aren't interested in what is right and what is wrong. They're interested in decisions being given and going the way of the team they support. So the referee is always going to be the, you know, the aim of abuse and derision.
Right. Well, let me just continue on that theme. As I mentioned to Andy earlier, Jeff, I was watching a lot of YouTube football last night, and screaming at me was a match between Coventry and Charlton at Highfield Road, and I thought, I was there. I'll remind myself about that. First,
John
goal,
Aloisi.
Yeah, first goal should not have stood. Hedman has his hand on the ball, and the ball is between his hand and the surface, but you gave it. And then you sent Aloisi off instead of that knob Danny Mills. What were you thinking?
Well, hindsight is a wonderful thing. I can't recall the first incident. I mean, I only refereed for 25 years, so one mistake in 25 years, I suppose. I'm going to have to take that on the chin, because you're a learned football man, and if you were telling me I got it wrong, I got it wrong.
You could, to be fair, Jeff, you couldn't see it, to be fair.
Couldn't see a lot of things. On the second one, it does feature on the story of Danny Mills, does feature, and that incident with John Aloisi, does feature on my after dinner act. And I think I say then what I should have thought at the time. If I'd known it was Danny Mills and how he was going to turn out, I mightn't have seen that elbow.
It's great, brilliant, brilliant.
What? Yeah, absolutely. And those that haven't followed the Winter versus Mills saga should do. And Jeff Winter is available for after dinners. And if you wish, and I would, to any corner of the globe. It's just very funny, man.
Keezy, can I ask Jeff a quick one on? Just
yeah, go on.
Jeff, what? Often we talk and when we've retired from whatever profession we were in, particularly in football, and people look back and say, how was it in your day? It was better, but I enjoyed it then. It was more fun when I played. Certainly get the feeling with me as a player. I'm thinking since the VAR introduction, do you think you would have enjoyed, and I maybe use the word enjoyed loosely, but would you have enjoyed working in today's environment, do you think, with all the technology and all the crap that's around now, as opposed to when you did?
I think it's the same as when we talk to former players and you say, you know, the old days, we sound like our granddads, but
yeah,
the good
do.
Old days. Nowadays, they're on more money, they've got better conditions, and we have liked that? Of course we
take
would,
that out
human.
Of it. Take that out of it.
Taking that out of it, I think in my generation, you could have some banter with the players. If you came at me full of hell, effing and blinding, I could give you it back and we'd smile and we'd get on with it. We were allowed to manage games. We didn't have to throw red and yellow cards around like confetti.
No.
Would I have liked refereeing in this present era, then no, because I see referees now. I mean, the way I sum it up was, in my day, you could see players and referees, yes, screaming and shouting at each other, but also a smile, a wink, a nod. Nowadays, when did you ever last watch a Premiership game and see a referee ever smiling? You know, it is now their jobs, it is now their career, their heads are on the line and everything else that goes with it. I think the enjoyment's gone. It's not a sport, it's a business.
I agree with you. Yeah.
And, you know, I know I am a grandfather now and I sound like a grandfather, you know, back in my day. And yes, there was so much wrong. We made mistakes, though, and when there was screaming and shouting for video technology, I went on record and said, be careful what you wish for. Because, you know, we haven't actually taken away the disagreement over decisions. We've just now made it farcical, because if you said, was that handball? I don't know what a handball is. I do know if I was a footballer, I would cut my toenails before I played football. That could be the difference between seeing a world-class goal chalked off. I mean, this offside, goal line technology, the best thing that ever happened. It proved that, you know, when people, pundits and commentators used to say, everyone in the ground could see that was over the line. Well, we now know everyone in the ground couldn't see it was over the line. We're talking about millimetres, a ball driven in at 60, 70, 80 miles an hour. The naked eye cannot perform that quickly. So brilliant goal line technology. But, you know, seeing wonder goals and seeing players and spectators standing around, is it a goal? Isn't it a goal? And looking at it from a referee's point of view, I remember seeing Martin Atkinson, very experienced referee. He's stood on the pitch at Arsenal and there's a decision being looked at. Now, I don't know whether I can use the language that came into my head, so perhaps I won't. The expression on his face went, it just looked as if his mind was going, what the is going on here? You know, now, I'm not saying the referee has got to be the be-all and the end-all, and referees do need help, you know, on the Thierry Henry type incident where it's on the blind side, we can't see it. But even now with VAR, you're still going to get Man United fans saying it was, Man City fans saying it wasn't, Rangers saying it was, Celtic saying it wasn't. You're not going to change that. And when you have your pundits on, who, by the way, everybody reckons should be allowed to referee the game.
No.
That would be fun. Not so much pundits, former players, whatever. But that would be fun because it doesn't matter who makes the decision. We're not getting universal agreement. Yeah. All we've done is kill the momentum, kill the excitement, kill what we as fans, referees and players love about the game of football. And if you take away our ability post-match to be able to talk about things and have a discussion, a friendly argument, did you think it was a penalty? I did, you didn't. Let's talk about it. If you turn the game into a game of chess, you kill it for me.
Well, I know, Andy, I told you you'd enjoy talking to him, Andy. I mean, he's speaking our language. But two things there, Jeff. One, the technology drives the decision-making. And if I'm Martin Atkinson waiting for Jared Gillette to tell me the decision I should have taken because he can see it again and I only saw it real-time on the pitch, I'm the guy making the call. I don't want technology to make my mind up for me if I'm an experienced ref of Atkinson's stature. That's one point. Two, I'll tell you why you wouldn't have wanted to work in this era, because you'd have had to work for Mike Riley.
Well, don't forget, I worked alongside Mike Riley. Now, Mike is a nice man. I'm not going to go into a character assassination, but he's not one of the lads. He was, you know, they all often say about the FA and the authorities, they, you know, you've got to be an FA man to be manager of England, etc. And to be in charge or involved in the refereeing hierarchy, you've got to toe the line. And Mike Riley uses his referees like that. Now, in the not too far distant future, Howard Webb is coming on board.
Thank goodness.
Howard Webb is a totally different character. But Howard Webb is still going to have his wages paid by the authorities. And those authorities, you know, the PGMOL, are basically run by the clubs. You know, so if we have a cleanup campaign and the referees start sending more players off, the clubs will start complaining. It happened in my day. And then, you know, the cleanup campaign gets watered down. So it does need a shake up. I certainly would be far happier working for Howard Webb than I would have been working for Mike Riley. But I don't think it's just going to change overnight.
What would your view, Jeff, be of being told by Jared Gillette to go to a monitor? And you know the moment that you're told that you're going to have to change your mind, because Mike Riley wants to, I suppose maybe he's chasing uniformity, I don't know. But you know, as the referee goes, he's going to be told what he should be doing. Surely that's wrong. The last decision has to be made by the man in the middle.
Well, yes, I would have said so, because what I can't answer you, because it's never happened to me. But let's go back, Andy, to your playing days.
Yeah.
I make a decision. Somebody else tells me I've got it wrong. So I change my decision. Now, there is a school of thought, and quite agreeable, I would think, where people turn around and say, well, we got the right decision, if that was the case, by the way. But I just think then, in a few minutes' time, as I make another decision, and isn't Andy Gray and all his teammates going to be in my ear saying,
oh, yes.
Are you sure, Jeff? You got the last one wrong, you know.
Yes, you better believe it.
And that's human nature. The players are going to do that. And I think, you know, it's difficult to answer it, because if a referee categorically says, I don't want help, I don't need help, I'm the big man, I'm making the decisions, that does come across as slightly arrogant. And if you can be assisted where you have clearly and obviously made a mistake, usually because, you know, you're unsighted, you're in the wrong position, then nobody is going to turn around and say, I won't accept that help. But now, you know, the splitting hairs and the looking at minute things. And as a referee, you like a player, you know, a goalkeeper, Pope the other night, he had to stand and fall by his performance on the night. A referee has to stand and fall by his. And over, it was interesting when they looked at facts and figures, I think I read somewhere that 95% of the referee's decisions in a game of football are correct.
No.
Now, the other 5% obviously cost managers the jobs. Nothing to do with the fact that the manager's on a 10-match run where his team haven't won. It's that decision by the referee that costs the manager his job. So, you know, you can make facts and figures and numbers tell you anything.
Well, that's what Riley does, as we know.
By the way, Jeff, sorry I was a bit quiet there. I'm just picking myself off the floor after you saying they got 95% of the decisions right.
Well, in my case, it was actually 5%, but you know what I mean. The better
Jeff,
ones.
If you made a decision that Alex Ferguson didn't like, were you facing the prospect of not refereeing Manchester United for a period of time?
Well, that was a very, very well-researched question, Mr. Keyes.
Thank you, Jeff.
Like I said earlier, the big clubs do have, I presume in any country, not only England, they do have a massive say in the game. And maybe it was just circumstance. But yes, I sent Roy Keane off at Southampton, and I didn't referee Manchester United for a couple of years, which that might just be coincidence. I don't know.
I don't believe Fergie had anything to do with that, Jeff. That's bang out of order. No chance.
But, I mean, what Fergie did very, very cleverly and I mean, Fergie, a great manager for Manchester United. And, I mean, he built and rebuilt Manchester United two or three times over. And you can't take anything away. But he was also very clever. And when he had, post-match interviews, he was playing the mind games. You know, he would say something like, do you know, we haven't had a penalty this season. And he's not having a go at me.
Jeff, when he said that, it was only the second weekend.
Yeah, well, it was actually at half-time of the first game, but all he was doing was throwing doubt and throwing thought into the minds of referees so that the next week, you know, I'm not the brightest person on God's earth. I don't know how subconsciously you react to things. So if he's made these statements and they're all in the newspapers, Manchester United haven't had a penalty, then who knows, maybe a 50-50 the following week he gets.
Oh, yes.
And I recall towards the end of one season, I think they played Sunderland. That might not be true, but they'd drawn and, you know, it was two lost points. And for no apparent reason, he castigated Alan Wiley and criticised his fitness. And, you know,
yes, I remember.
And
yeah.
There was nothing in the game. And you left scratching your head and you're thinking, why has he done that? Or why has he picked on any other named referee? And I honestly believe that he knew 4 or 5 matches down the line, there was a title decider coming up against Arsenal. And if he had gone to town on a referee, he might get a charge. But the powers that be would make sure that that referee didn't referee Manchester United again or any other team. Fergie wasn't the only one, you know, for the foreseeable future until any disciplinary action was taken. Yeah. So indirectly, Fergie and others were picking and choosing their referees for the game. And I'm convinced that happened, you know, and... I remember when I started refereeing, I'm going back to Parks and Gardens in Middlesbrough, and you used to get your appointments for the month. And the final Saturday of the month, I'd had this team, and it was, you know, it was Thugs and Vagabonds versus, the, you know, a worse level. And this particular team had a terrible disciplinary record. And during the course of this game, I've booked about 6 and sent one off. And as I'm coming off at the end, the secretary said, you know, that was disgusting, worst referee we've ever seen. And he put his match report, and I think I'd got one of my better marks that season, 1 out of 10. And he told the fixtures secretary, we never want that referee winter again. So it was the last Saturday of the month. The fixtures came out for the following month. And following Saturday, 7 days on, I'm refereeing the self and same team. And the fixtures secretary turned round to the club's secretary and said, I appoint the referees, not you.
Good.
Now, I went and did the game. They were falling over and apologising to each other. There wasn't, I think I'd give a free kick against them in 90 minutes. No yellow cards, no red cards. You know, refereeing has won. Now, unfortunately, the people in charge of the referees at the highest level, they're so scared of the powerful clubs that they sort of, if a club had said the same sort of thing, oh, we'd better keep Jeff away from, you know, Leicester City or any team for a few weeks until the dust dies down. And, you know, if you've got that power and that influence dictating, and you know, Andy, I think it's 10 times worse in Scotland because it's a goldfish bowl. And throw into the equation the conspiracy theories over who you support, for his family or what religion they are, and it becomes 100 times worse. You know, refereeing, good, bad, or indifferent, as bad as I was, or whoever's perception, you've got to have someone independent to referee a game of football, otherwise you haven't got a game of football.
That's true.
As we're finding now with all the arguments for VAR, VAR was supposed to clear things up and make them better.
Oh, good.
Ironically, in some parts of the world, they appear to have done that. But in England, or over here, where you've got, I touched on earlier, what's a handball? They kept changing it through a season.
Well,
you've got a farcical situation this season in Scotland where VAR is being introduced halfway through the season. Which is an absolute joke, you know.
Well, Jeff, just on that subject, I'm sorry, I know you're rushing and I want to get just 2 quick questions in because you've got to go. But on that subject, we still use VAR in some FA Cup ties, but not others. How can that be? But what I want to know more than anything else is when that ball that Dean Windass had struck with Vett hit the back of your head at Anfield, did you ever consider going over like the poor late, great Paul Alcock, or were you, because you were from the borough, determined to stand and just take it?
I'm a borough lad, you know, we're not going down. We're a ball driven at you 90 mile an hour. That's like a tap on the head in a club in Friday night.
Not if you're a player these days, it isn't, Jeff.
Oh,
I'd do
a double somersault and milk it for what I could.
I want to ask you one thing, Jeff, as well on that. Right, I get Middlesbrough, right? I get you support them, but Rangers?
No, you've got that wrong, Andy. He supports Rangers Penn.
Oh, dear me. I've had that question asked to me 55 times.
There you have.
55 times I've had that question answered to me, and supporting Rangers, as you know, Andy, Rangers aren't a Scottish club, they're a British club. Oh, yes. I've followed them from the days of Jim Baxter, and during my refereeing career, I went up there for many European ties. Since my refereeing career has finished, it's gone a step further. I'm a season ticket holder up there.
Brilliant.
I travel all over Europe watching them. All over Europe. I'm even going to Liverpool next Tuesday night. So, you know.
Well, all I can say, Jeff, if I'd have known it all those years ago, I would never have called you a knob. Ever. Not one of our own.
I'm a blue nose knob anyhow.
Jeff, last question. Did you know it was Windass?
Oh.
What I said at half time, I think you were at Sky at the time.
We were.
And the floor manager, I think it was Smarty or someone, came across at half time and said, why didn't you send him off? And I said, who was it? I said, I didn't know it was. Think about it. It came from behind me.
Yeah. It did, yes.
He's kicked the ball in sheer frustration at the penalty decision. It hit me in the back of the head. And I've said, who was it? And they said, Dean Windass. I said, well, there you are then. I couldn't have been done on purpose because it was the only shot he got on target all night.
I repeat what we said earlier. Jeff Winter, proper bloke, proper ref, available for after dinner. Any which way you like and anywhere else in the world that you care to mention is available. Would that be fair, Jeff?
I've loved coming out to Bahrain, and I've done a few in your part of the world. And the great thing, it doesn't matter where. Yeah, Rangers True Blues, Andy, you'd have liked that one.
Yeah, I've been there, yes.
Yeah, I know you have. The thing is, wherever there's an audience, people love talking about football, even if it's from, an old-time referee, because we can always have a laugh, we can always have a reminisce, and we've all got opinions, so it's always good banter.
Jeff, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. It's
an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure. Speak to you later,
thanks,
guys.
Jeff. Thanks, good Jeff. Mate. See you, buddy. I told you, Andy, what a good lad. Honestly, I could sit and talk to him all day, and unfair because we're not paying him. So if you want to hear more from Jeff Winter, as I've said, just get in touch. We'll steer you in the right direction. Proper blue nose.
I mean, that staggered me. Honestly, I thought he would say, well, yeah, I quite like looking at Rangers results, but I've been a supporter since Jim Baxter days. That's my days when I was supporting them. And I've been here and I've been there and I watch them even more now and I'm a season ticket holder. What?
Yes. That makes him different to you. At least he's got a season ticket there.
Exactly. Well, it's a bit difficult from Qatar, isn't it?
Right. Speaking of which, I shall see you back there Friday for the weekend on BeIN Sports.
By the way, Friday, Saturday, are we seeing, are we haircutting Saturday?
We are. Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah, we've had a fortnight without a haircut. Right. And in your case, I know what a mess you get into.
Yeah, it's in my eyes. It's in my eyes. Take easy. Got to put some gel on.
Over and out. Hope you enjoyed it.
Right. Cheers.